What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the In the Round podcast. You got Matt, Tyler, Coda Bear, the whole crew, and we are in a new spot today, recording at a buddy's apartment and whatnot until the studio gets ready. And we have got a great buddy of ours, a guy that we've been wanting to get on for a while, a guy I knew about way back in New York before coming down here. It's a buddy named Jesse Lavelle. Jesse, how you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me by.
Dude, no problem. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. Absolutely. And you were filling us in. So by the time this airs, this will be airing on Monday the 24th. Yeah. You'll be full into it, what you were just telling us. You got a lot of stuff going on. You're going to be hitting the road a lot.
Yeah. This Saturday, I get in the days mixed up right now because we're doing so much. This Saturday, we're opening for Jason Aldean. We're supporting Morgan Wallen in Kansas at Country Stampede. And the next week, we're out on the road to Michigan. We play with Big and Rich and Granger Smith.
Jeez.
And that's a really cool festival in Midland, Michigan. And then we're back, some more rehearsals, and then we're out with Rodney Atkins. So we're playing a lot of festivals, a lot of cool gigs coming up. And I'm just planning every day, all day right now, building my guitar tones and, you know, all the gearhead stuff.
That's the fun stuff.
Yeah. It's like that's the planning. It's the pre-part. It's like the pre-party, you know.
Yeah, now is this like a first for you, like in the summer going out and doing a bunch of festivals, or is this like a regular summer kind of thing?
This is the first summer since moving to Nashville. I've been here about 6 years, and this is the first summer I've played any festivals. The I guess it's the Country Stampede in Topeka, Kansas this Saturday is actually my first American festival ever.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank
congrats,
you,
man. That's a
it's
huge
the
step.
Very first one. Yeah, you know, I've played a lot in Nashville. I've played a lot of colleges, but I've never got on a festival bill, and this is the first one. So,
and that's a pretty good festival for the first one. That Country Stampede, that's a national festival that people come in from all over the country, all over the world for. So that'll be awesome.
I think they have, I think Old Dominion and Jake Owen are on Friday night, so we're going to get there just in time to catch those sets. And then got to go to sleep, wake up early, and, you know, start the day. There's radio, and there's just a whole bunch of stuff that I'm getting used to, so it's cool.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So you say First American Festival. You're from Canada.
Yes, I am.
What part of Canada? I think I saw Toronto.
Toronto, Ontario. Yeah, man. How about the Raptors, huh?
Yeah, congrats on the Raptors, man. I'm sure that's awesome.
Oh, man, I kind of wanted to be there today. I'm sort of glad I didn't drive up because there's like 3 million people invading downtown Toronto. You know, like CMA Fest and like the draft here were kind of crazy. That was like a couple hundred thousand. We're talking 3 million people in Toronto.
I was in New York City when they did the ticker tape parade for U.S. Women's National Team in 2015.
Wow.
And there was like a million people in the city there. Oh, man. And that was insane.
Now, with the Raptors, they represent not just Toronto, but the whole country.
Exactly. People have flown in from all across Canada to be in Toronto today. Just they declared it a national holiday. It's a We the North Day.
Yeah.
It's the first time in franchise history. It's only the second time in my life that I've seen a sports team from my hometown win.
Yeah.
In the 90s, it was the Blue Jays.
Yeah, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that was 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
But I was like a young kid when that happened. And now the Raptors is just crazy. I mean, I was at a party here with like, must have been every Canadian that I knew was in one bar just jumping up and screaming and cheering. There was like a couple Oakland fans, you know, and they kind of had it handed to them.
I was at a bar at the time and there was nothing but Oakland fans. Like there was like
what a horrible night.
Oh, dude, there's literally people crying.
Oh, man.
Like
They win all the time, though. That's so great to see a team from the East Coast that doesn't have LeBron James on. And for it to be Toronto, I'm happy for you.
We were crying tears of happiness when that happened.
Oh,
it was crazy.
Now, how would it be if the Leafs won the Stanley Cup? Would that compare
to... You know that we're a hockey country, right? Although basketball was created in Canada.
Really?
By a Canadian, So it was cool that they brought the trophy back to Canada. The first time ever the trophy for the NBA has come to Canada. But, I mean, if we won the Stanley Cup, that would just be a whole other deal. I mean, that's like Canada's native sport being won.
Yeah, so coming from Canada down to here, I mean, Nashville, they got the Preds here.
Yep.
And I didn't realize coming from New York, I mean, obviously I grew up a big Rangers fan and big in hockey and all that stuff. But you come down here, you wouldn't expect Nashville to be as big of a hockey fan base.
It's amazing. It's a hockey city.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how that's happened so
quick.
And
you know what, like, that's the thing is, like, we were talking about it, like, there's only two sports here. There's NFL and hockey.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL team ain't good. So everybody's like a hockey fan.
Well, they're doing better, right?
Yeah, they're better.
They're
it's not like 99, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that team.
No, so, the Preds are great, though. Yeah, I mean, it's super cool coming down here because I grew up surrounded by hockey. And, you know, hockey being the main sport, kind of switched to basketball when the Raptors came in because, you know, we love our Raptors. But coming down here and seeing how supportive they are of hockey, it's like, where'd this come from? We're in the South. You know, yeah. It's like boiling hot all the time. There's no ice. There's no snow, but they love the hockey, so it's cool.
Of course,
cool.
Being a Braves fan, I have to thank you for AA as our GM.
You know. Yep.
Yeah, he's a good thing.
Are you from Atlanta?
I'm originally from Atlanta.
Cool. Yeah,
so, big Braves fan here. Nice. Unfortunately, he's a Yankees fan.
I'm a New Yorker.
It makes sense.
Yankees,
you know?
Giants, Rangers, unfortunately, the Knicks.
Like, I would love Nashville to get a basketball team.
I would too.
Come on. It's like we got the Bridgestone. We've got the population. We've got the people that are excited. But Tennessee's just got the Grizzlies. I guess that's
so far out west.
Yeah.
They do well out there, though. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of friends will drive out to Memphis to see a Grizzlies game.
Yep.
You know,
when the Raps come next year, I'm going.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot closer for me to go to Memphis than it is back up to Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Now, speaking of Canada, something that we love in America, you see a lot of people love Canadian TV shows.
Yes.
Particularly, too. Trailer Park Boys, I used to watch a lot. Yep. Letterkenny we got into this year.
Okay.
Letterkenny, is that as popular a show in Canada as it seems to be?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't been in Canada for a long time. Okay. Like, I haven't spent any time up there. I mean, I think the last time I went back was December, but it was only for like a week. And before that, I hadn't been back for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
So, and I wish that I'd go back more often, but it's just you have to work so hard here.
Yeah.
To kind of even just try and crack the egg just a little bit. You know, it's like
if
you leave for a week, it's like someone else is going to be cracking it harder than you. And you come back and it's like you're behind.
Absolutely.
So I don't know too much about what's popular up there. I've heard that Schitt's Creek is doing really well now. But that's a Canadian thing. That's been around for it's been around there forever. I mean, people are telling me you got to watch this. I'm like, man, that was out in Canada like 8 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, like that's just been out there forever.
Funny.
Yeah. I found that last year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Netflix. It came on Netflix.
Yep.
But yeah, no, Hulu picked up. And now, so Crave TV is still doing it in Canada, but in America, they're calling it now a Hulu original series.
Okay, so people don't realize it's been out
for
Letterkenny.
For Letterkenny, because they're about to release season 7.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, so coming from Canada, the country scene up there, so you're coming up doing that stuff, and obviously big Canadian country artists that are out there. I mean, you got...
There are lots,
Yeah, you got people like Shania. You got... It seems like a lot of the girls doing a lot of stuff right now. You got Meg Patrick.
Yep.
You've got... Well, Lindsay L's doing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was your take on country music in Canada when you were like, I want to do this style of music?
Country music in Canada has typically been a little bit behind where country music is here. The change, you know, when country kind of went a little more pop based, that wasn't really happening up in Canada. It's kind of happening now. It's like, we're kind of a couple years behind up in Canada. But, you know, I made a bunch of records up in Canada and I got the opportunity to go on tour with some great artists. Like I toured with Keith Urban up in Canada I toured with, FGL and, Eric Church, and I opened for Brad Paisley. And I really realized when I was playing those shows, like if I'm really going to do this, if I'm ever going to get to that level, I have to get out of Canada. I have to, and I hate to say that, but if you have a career in Canada, you have to spend all of your time up in Canada. And like I was saying, you have to work so hard here just to get noticed, just to crack it. I realized, I'm like, if I ever want to play the concert as the headliner, I have to move to Nashville and I have to just stop playing in Canada all the time and focus on making it in Music City. So when I moved down here, I kind of left my whole Canadian career behind, and it was a hard thing to do. And it took a couple of years to like even land on my feet. But, I came down here and I've been playing and writing, and it's like, it's just starting with these festivals to kind of come back full circle. Cause when I left Canada, I was just starting to get festival dates there.
Yeah.
And I just gave that up, and it was a tough thing to do cause it put me behind a couple of years. But again, I think that, focusing on the hub of country music being Nashville was the right decision to make. So.
Yeah, and you said you've been here for about 6 years.
So you're coming here
about that 2013, 2014 range.
Yep.
That's when that kind of that pop country, bro country kind of came in.
So yeah.
That's when Nashville really started becoming what it is today.
What it is now.
That's when I moved to Nashville also. It was 2013.
Well, the wild thing is that I actually came, my first trip to Nashville was like 13 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was when the Gulch wasn't even a thing. Like, I remember that they took me to dinner near the Gulch, and I was like, what is this area? They're like, you don't go there. You know, and for anyone listening outside of Nashville, that's like the most built up area in Nashville now.
That
like,
is tourist.
It's like the
Central,
W Hotel, the Thompson Hotel. People line up to take pictures with wings for 3 hours.
That's where Taylor Swift had Hermione at, you know. A lot of people.
And I just remember coming here and think, like, not really understanding the city that much. I didn't even go to Broadway the first time I was in Nashville.
Really?
I was put up at a hotel on West End. I was living in New York at the time.
Okay.
Actually, I was writing music and producing music in New York City for an artist who had a major label deal. And I was just working as a songwriter and a producer. And they're like, you know, if you really want to songwrite, you got to go to Nashville. And I came down here and I didn't get it. And everyone here was saying to me, you need to move to Nashville. It was like this tribal thing. It was like, move to Nashville, move to Nashville. Yeah. And I felt uncomfortable with it at first. But what I realized as I came back, because I was like, well, if this is the hub of songwriting, I got to come back. And I came back at least once a year. And for the next 6 years before I moved here, I'd come back once or twice a year. And I slowly realized that the reason they were saying, you got to move, wasn't because they were trying to like get me to join a cult. They actually realized back then, and I wish I had too, that if I wanted my career as a songwriter and my skill, if I wanted to up my game, I had to be here.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the only place in the world you can go where you're writing with and against the best in the entire game. Yeah. So it's like, if you want to play pro basketball, you better be playing with people getting drafted into the NBA, right? You need to keep your game right up there. So, Nashville is an incredible, incredible city. I love being here and I don't think I'll ever leave.
Yeah, no, that's how I feel coming from New York. And New York is a huge city. Toronto, oh, huge
New York's
city,
incredible. Yeah.
And they're great cities and they're big cities. But when I come down here, it is a bigger city. It's growing.
It's
still got that small feel to it where it seems like everybody knows everybody. You go out for a drink at Losers and you don't know who you're going to bump into kind of thing. Yeah. Or you could bump into somebody and that can be a huge connection for you.
Well, that's the beauty of it. You know, all my friends, I have so many friends that are moving here. It's like, who isn't moving to Nashville right now? And everyone who moves here, they're like, what do I do when I move here? I'm like, I hate to say this. It's like, go out every night. You know, like, go out, meet people, because it's so insular here. You know, there's Midtown. You go to Midtown, you will meet people that will change your life for the better.
Yeah.
You know, every single night. It's funny, when I moved down here, I used to go out and I would say to my friends, I'd be like, every time I go out, I meet someone amazing.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a writer or a publisher or someone that knows somebody who knows someone at a booking agency, or, you know, you just make friends and it's like summer camp here. It's like,
oh, honestly, I say really that is. In high school.
It feels like summer camp in high school. Yeah, it really is. And I mean, I encourage people to move down here all the time. I think there's so much opportunity. You just have to come down and embrace it.
Yeah, and then there's places like Whiskey Jam, like events like that, and big writers' rounds like Revival.
Oh, yeah.
What was your first experience going to something like that where you were like, this is cool, I dig this?
I went to Whiskey Jam probably right around the time that it was really fresh. I mean, because that was probably 8 years ago, maybe, you know, around that time. And it was pretty small back then. But I remember, like, I think I saw Brett Eldridge play it at Whiskey Jam way back when. And he was like, and I think even Old Dominion was playing it back then. Like, but Matt had long hair. It was like a whole other world. So I've always really loved the fact that there is that musical community here. And that's one of the main reasons I moved. I'm like, if I can go somewhere where every night you can go in Midtown, like a 4-block radius, and there's just music and people supporting the music and trying to push it out to the public.
And it's original music.
And it's original music.
Which is really hard because you have people playing covers, and downtown is downtown, and it's great for what it is and great for the tourist community and stuff. But as a musical guy yourself, that's got to be such a cool feeling to just walk through and see new art come out.
It is.
Like,
you know, like I came up in Toronto in the open mic scene because it was the only way I could ever get out and play. And I did that for a little while, but, you know, there was only like 2 bars in Toronto or 3 bars on any given night you can go and do an open mic. And each of them was probably 30 minutes away from the other one. So it's just so spread out. And that's why I decided to leave, was that the opportunity is too few and far between.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As Coda Bear comes strolling in with his flannel and his mustache and his Taco Bell free.
Smashing.
There you go.
But so for songwriting stuff, how old were you when you wrote your first song?
You were like, I was probably like 13 or 14, maybe a little younger. I was in a band in junior school.
What kind of music were you guys? Were you like one of those rock bands?
It was
rock music.
Parents'
garage, and you were
full on out.
We
had a Stratocaster, you know, the bass player, and we had a drummer. It was a 3-piece, and we were just like, we're gonna do Black Sabbath. You know, like we're just gonna crush classic rock riffs and just make as much noise as we possibly could. And then I guess when I was in, I think like grade 6, maybe earlier than that even, we had a music class. And my vocal teacher said, guys, there's a contest called YTV. It was Young Television. And they were doing like a original music contest. And he came up to me and he said, look, you know, I know that you sing in like the choir class or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he said, if you write songs, I'll produce it for you and we'll enter it. And we entered and we got like top 10.
That's awesome.
In this contest. Yeah. And that was like the first kind of idea I had. I was probably 14 because I'm remembering now. When I was 13, I got my first Stratocaster. It was a year later. And we did this talent show and we played it and we submitted this song. And we actually, we didn't win the contest, but we got really, really close. And at that point, me and my buddies were like, no, you know, we should like do this band thing. We should continue it. And from that moment forward, from the time I was probably 14 up until the time I was 18, I was just in bands, you know, all the time.
What was the name of that initial band? Do you remember?
Oh my God. I think it was, that's really bad. I think the first band was actually called Flower.
Flower.
Yeah. And it was a guitar turned upside down, planted in the ground. You know, like we had the headstock underneath the ground and the guitar itself. Like
that's pretty dope.
It was pretty cool, yeah. Man. I mean, the name was kind of lame, but the logo was cool, man. It was like,
I think it's a brand named Daisy. Makes an they actual, do like, that. Guitar.
We should have like got you the copyright guitar. On that one.
You know, yeah. I think at the time my dad was telling me stories about how he had gone to Woodstock because it was actually at Woodstock. My dad was one of those like original hippies who was actually
shit, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think at the time I was like, yeah, flower power, man. That's like we're a rock band, you know, like we're gonna do this cool thing and put a flower in the ground. Now I'm like, I'll never call my band Flower. That's just, and then it changed. And we were Label at one point. Or Simple Complexity at one point, just bad names, like really bad band names.
And you're playing like the bar scene when you're going out and playing gigs?
Yeah, we were doing a lot of colleges in Canada. Then we were called Canal Street. The reason we were called Canal Street, that was probably the only half cool name we had, was because Canal Street is the street in New York City, as yeah. you know, yep. with all of the rip-offs, you yeah. want to call it. And we were yeah. doing cover songs, only covers.
Yeah.
But we spent like a good 4 years doing the entire Canadian college circuit or that's Ontario. Awesome. So we yeah. would just hit the 401, which is the highway up there, and we would go from town to town playing all of the college gigs. And it was really like it is on Broadway here, you know, like there was that kind of vibe because college kids like to party. And
yeah, what's the college scene of as far as playing music up in Canada like? Because that's a huge thing here. I mean, people,
yeah.
guys get, especially with the Georgia boys, they get their start really playing colleges. Athens and playing down near like Georgia yeah. State and Georgia Southern.
Same with Alabama, you yeah. know, it's University of Alabama.
Just
Auburn,
the Southeast
North.
In general, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah the scene in Ontario, I can't speak for the rest of Canada. Canada's a huge country.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the issues with touring Canada is that it takes sometimes 2 days to get from one city to the next city. Like there's so much just empty land.
Yeah. You
know, there's just, it's farmed. It's so, Canada has more country than probably any other country in the entire world. I mean, there's like, you drive for days and it's just cornfields and it's just flat land and it's farms. And then you get from small city to big city, but like Toronto to Winnipeg, which is the next large city, you know, really, it's like a 2 day drive.
That's insane.
It's nuts. So I only know the Ontario, the province that I was in. It's like Canada has provinces instead of states.
Yeah.
So Ontario is like the state, quote unquote, that I grew up in. And I only know the Ontario scene because we had to get there by car. I mean, you don't fly to college gigs.
No,
you know, it's
no.
like that's not a luxury you can really afford. So we would just drive. But the scene up there is great. I mean, I can only imagine it's like being down in Georgia or being in Mississippi or, you know, anywhere or Alabama where, you know, some of the college crowds are just great, big, you know, there's a lot of fraternities, a lot of parties.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of that.
Yeah, and with the social media now, too, people
yeah,
getting, I mean, you know how important that Instagram following can be and stuff like that. Like, that's
man, Instagram wasn't even, I mean, I don't want to like date my band or anything, but I don't even think Instagram was around.
Was it MySpace at that point or not
probably, even? I don't even know. Like, when we did these college gigs, I don't think social media was even like much of, like, Facebook was around. But there was no like Instagram or yeah. stories or like live feeds or any of that
so
stuff.
So it was
like
just playing for kids, having yeah, fun, making some money.
It was like
doing
you put
gig.
Up posters in the college and you said like go to Frankenstein's on a Friday night and we've got this band called Canal Street and people would just show up because people want to party on a Friday and Saturday night. Yeah. We'd play two nights in a row, you know, crash in a dorm somewhere. And
yeah, what kind of covers were you doing? What were some of your go-tos?
Oh, everything. Like, we were playing some Alan Jackson. We were playing AC/DC. We were playing Alabama. We were playing Leonard Skinner. You know, like, everything.
Throwing it all over the
we're
place.
We're all
That's
over
awesome.
The place. You know, it was a little bit of country, a little bit of Southern rock, a little bit of classic rock. It's kind of all over the place. Just really guitar music. I've always been a guitar guy first and foremost. So it's like, I actually opened my show now with like a 3 minute guitar mashup where it's just, you know, riffs that bleed into one another for like 3 minutes
nice.
Straight. And, you know, it kind of gets the crowd going like, oh, okay, okay. So he can play. And I know these songs. And then we play originals after. 'Cause,
yeah.
you know, as a new artist, you gotta got to give the crowd something that they know.
Yeah, no, and you got to, that's a great way to win them over. Now, as far as the guitar with your writing and stuff, does that make you want to go more towards melodies? Are you thinking, are you playing melodies in your head or are words coming into your mind first?
It's kind of both at the same time. I need to, like, I would say that the songs that I'm the most proud of, one of them being Hey Rachel, one of them being another song called Two Hearts and a Diamond, they kind of just come out not fully formed, because I co-write, obviously we all co-write here, it's the thing, but you know, the basis for it sort of, it bleeds out at once, like the melody and some of the words come out, but not all the words are there.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like an all-in-one thing, and if it doesn't happen that way, it's funny, I have a friend in town right now who's writing, and he's had like some 4 and 5 hour writing sessions, and I'm like, dude, if I feel like if it doesn't happen in like an hour or two, you're beating your head up against something that, you know, probably is not meant to be happening at that moment. And I mean, I know there's a lot of writers that probably say I'm crazy for saying that, but I think that inspiration comes from a divine place, and either it's happening or it isn't.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a moment or there's not. And if, you know, it's not a bad thing if the moment's not there, because no one's can be great all the time.
No,
you know?
Absolutely not. Like, yeah, no.
And like every writer has, you know, the book, and it's all the stuff that's not finished yet.
Yeah.
And like you always go back and thumb through it. And, you know, I've done that before, and some days you finish a song off of that.
Yeah.
You know, some days you don't need the new, fresh idea. Sometimes you're in a headspace that's different, and you can go back and finish a song that maybe 2 years ago you started.
Yeah. I wish I had a book. I'm all voice notes now. I hate that it's so digital, you know? I used to have books.
Yeah.
I want to bring that back.
So you do. So you're like, so for like co-writing, would say a situation happen where you would send a voice memo to somebody else and be like, hey, this is what I got right now. Let's work with it. Or do you prefer to get in the room?
I prefer to get in the room. I very rarely send anything until I'm in the room with them.
Okay.
And I'll say like, and I have the, you know, the group of people that I write with, and that I really trust with certain ideas. You know, like there's one co-writer that I wrote Hey Rachel with, and I wrote a whole bunch of stuff with. Her name is Ava, and I implicitly trust her with anything. We actually wrote a song for, you know, it's Austin Burke.
Yeah.
So we wrote with him, we wrote the song Slower.
Oh, no way.
It's done really, really well for him. And she's one of those people that I trust her in a 50-50 write, and I trust very few people in a 50-50 co-write. Like, if she comes in, I reserve ideas for her, because it's like I know that we finish each other's sentences, so to speak, when we're writing, and it just works. And, you know, then other writes, I'll go in and I'll bring nothing. If I'm writing with an artist and we're writing for them, I never provide the idea. I'm always like, if it's your artist project and you're doing this, you should come up with the idea, and we'll mold it and kind of, you know, see where that takes you.
How did you meet Ava?
I was playing around at Belcourt Taps.
Love that place.
Yeah. And I think Ava was playing after me. And Ava's really young, and she's new to she's only been here probably a year or two. And I think she's 22, a Berklee student. But she went up there and she started playing songs by herself, or that she'd written by herself. And she said that. She said, I wrote this by myself. You know, Ava will hear this. So I've told her this. The songs were good, but there's, you know, I don't think any of them were like life-changingly, you know, smash hit radio. They were just really, really good. And I was like, oh my God, if she's really good writing on her own, I'd love to see what it would be like to put two brains together.
Because
not a lot of people here, I don't see a lot of people at the rounds that go out and say, I wrote this by myself.
No, it's always
co-writing. Yeah. So that's something that I've sort of started looking for after that. I'm like, if you can write on your own, it's an awesome time. It's how I started writing. You know, when I was 18 and 19, I was writing songs. I didn't even know co-writing existed.
Yeah.
I was like, well, what's a co-write? You know, don't you just do it in your bedroom by yourself? You know, you come up with some words, and that's where it comes from. Isn't that what songwriting is? But yeah, Nashville's amazing because it's the co-writing capital. You know?
Yeah. What was your first experience co-writing like?
My first experience co-writing was not here. It wasn't in Nashville. I think it was in Canada, but it was, there was a dude in a band. We were actually dating, twin sisters at the time. It was
nice.
In high school, and he was in a big, popular, famous band in Canada. And I was just a high school student. He was quite a bit older than I was. So I was dating someone my age, and he was just like really, he was like, there was a large age gap.
Yeah.
But he used to show up in his fancy car at the high school and pick us up and take us out for lunch. And I was like, this guy's like famous, you know, he's in a big band. And we started writing together, and I realized how much I had to learn about writing. Cause I was like, wow, this guy really knows what he's doing. He's making a lot of money doing it. So he kind of taught me everything I know about songwriting and about co-writing. But I still, when I got here, it completely taught me 100% all the way over again. You know, it's like, I don't think as a songwriter, you can ever stop growing. I think there's so much to learn, so much room to grow. And it's just a really inspiring thing to do, because I don't think you can ever reach the pinnacle. Even some of the greats, I think they still have their best songs in them.
Yeah. I heard a thing said today, and the guy kind of said it really haphazardly, but like, it stuck with me. And he's like, we were talking about touring and all. I was out this weekend with a band, and he was like, you know, we're all kind of like sharks. Like, as soon as we stop swimming, like, we're done. Like, we sink to the bottom.
Yeah. That's great. That's absolutely great. I love that.
Yeah. That's so real with being in the city and stuff, is you got to be out and be on the grind and stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in terms of influences and stuff for you, I was looking on your Facebook profile, your bio, and I saw on there a little bit, like, all kinds of different influences thrown in there. Yeah. Literally everything. So for you, what kind of influences?
I grew up listening to a lot of classic country and classic rock. You know, I was listening to a lot of the Beatles. I was listening to a lot of Willie Nelson. I was listening to Merle Haggard. I was listening to James Taylor. I was listening to Cat Stevens. Really, just a lot of singer-songwriters and a lot of country artists.
Those are lyrical artists.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, it's like the lyrics have always been paramount to being there. It's like, I will go
to edit. You a big Jason Isbell guy?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Fantastic.
Did you see he just announced his tour for October for Nashville, the Ryman Run?
I didn't see that yet.
It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I think it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like 8 shows.
And you know those are all going to sell out. That's what's crazy. That's what's so cool is seeing how popular.
I'm saving up for all of them.
It's amazing. I mean, yeah, so lyrics, 100%. I'm a lyric guy. That's sort of, I got lost for a while up in Canada. I had a record deal, and they were so focused on just melodies. They didn't even care about lyrics. And I would turn things in, and they'd be like, no, the melody needs to be better. I'm like, who cares? If the lyric isn't there, there's nothing there. It's like you're just throwing a ball at a wall. Like it's not sticking. It's just, for me, lyrics are everything.
For America, that's how like LA is. Like they're more about
it's all melody
and the melody.
Well, it's crazy. I actually went out to LA and I wrote with one of my heroes, which is Richard Marx. Actually.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Richard has written tons of stuff. I mean, he wrote Long Hot Summer. Yeah. And Who Wouldn't Want to Be Me, or Better Life, maybe, like two of Keith's biggest early number one hits. And I love Richard on his own, never mind the stuff that he's written for other artists. I mean, he's had hits with like everyone from NSYNC to, you know, to Keith and above and beyond that, and himself. I mean, he's won Grammys. And I got to write with him last year, and the wildest thing was I got there and I had all these words, and he's like, nah, you know, like, I think we should write something, you know, that sounds like this. And he just sings these like random words, but this great melody. And I took me such a long time to wrap my mind around, like, yeah, but the words aren't right. And he's like, don't worry about it. Doesn't matter. We'll get the words. The words will come. And I'm like, that's not how I write.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's got to be the words first. And it was really cool to see that someone as successful and as great and as legendary of a songwriter as he is can go about it the other way, and it can still actually work. You know how I was also writing with? There was Matt Scannell from Vertical Horizon.
Oh, no. Awesome. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was, I was a little nervous that day. Needless to say, I was sitting in a room with like two, you know, the Vertical Horizon for me was a huge band in high school.
Yeah.
I was like, these guys rock. And then there's Richard Marx, and I'm just like, I get really nervous when I'm in writes with people of that pedigree, because it's like, you guys have done so much, and I'm just sitting here trying to have my first hit, and you've had like, you know, 20 apiece each, so...
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Now, where can people find you with the social media stuff, especially with all these big trips coming up?
Yeah.
People are going to want to follow along.
Instagram and Facebook, first and foremost. I'd like to be more active on Twitter, but I don't get on it enough.
That's how I am, too.
I love Twitter. I have like 5 accounts, all minor troll accounts.
He just messes with people.
You got fake Twitter accounts.
Oh, yeah, many of
them. What is a fake Twitter account called? I know on Instagram it's a Finsta. What?
I don't know.
He's a troll. No? He just goes on and just...
Just go and troll people.
Find,
huh?
Like somebody like really, really like mad about something and just like poke the bear a little
bit. But that's what like Twitter's an ongoing conversation, right? Yeah, that's what's cool about that. Instagram is more like, you know, here's my advertisement. It's like an advertising site. I guess Twitter's like to talk.
To me, like Twitter has less of an algorithm too.
Okay.
Because like with Instagram, you know, like there's the algorithm now of like
you get sold everything you're looking at on.
Well, not only that, but like,
oh yeah, those ads pop up.
But like, you know, like I'll see like Coda Bear's post from an hour ago, and Matt will post 10 minutes ago, and if I haven't looked at Matt's in a certain amount of time, it'll hide that and send it further down the timeline. Like there's that whole.
The timeline is weird. I've noticed that. I'm seeing things like 2 days later that are from 4 days ago.
Yeah.
Or you're seeing things like the day. It's just, it's not like in real time anymore.
It's all your algorithm, man. Uh-huh. And that's
really everything's an algorithm. Isn't that messed up?
Yeah. Same with Facebook. I mean, the whole world is like a
big old algorithm, right?
It is right now. Absolutely, man. Now, before you get out of here, you got that guitar next.
Yes.
Hey, Rachel, that song. What went into that song for you?
It's a really important song to me. It's a long story. I can tell you the whole thing.
Go for it. Yeah, I like hearing stories, man.
So back when I was recording and releasing records up in Canada, you know, the Toronto International Film Festival is a huge festival for movies up in Toronto. So I was invited to this really swanky party, and it was like at the Thompson, or where was it, the Soho House, I don't know, something. I went there, and Rachel McAdams was in the room. And she was like standing there, and I got in and I kind of caught her eye from across the bar, and I was like, I'm going to go and talk to Rachel McAdams. You know, like we all had a couple drinks, but I was like, this was my like, it was my notebook moment. You know, it's like, I'm going to go over and I'm going to talk to Rachel McAdams. I'm going to see where this goes. And she started talking to me. We talked for like a good 20 minutes. I was like, Rachel McAdams is talking to me right now.
Yeah.
This is crazy. She's a huge movie star. And she's actually in a band and she plays music and she's like, she plays some jazz music. And we got to talking and she said to me, the way I started the conversation was by saying, hey, Rachel, can we, you know, talk? And that's where the whole song, that's like the seed, the early seed of where that song came from. And she asked me to send her some music and she gave me her email and I sent her an email and I said, hey, Rachel, this is my music. I still have the email. And I sent it to her, and I'm still waiting for a response to it. I still haven't heard back, but I kind of dabbled with the title. You know, I was like, okay, I'm going to write Rachel McAdams a song, and I didn't really write her a song. But as fate would have it, I moved to Nashville, and I met another Rachel, and that Rachel and I started dating for a while. And I wrote the song after like the second date. I mean, it came really, really, really fast. I just, at the time, there's a line in the song that people ask me about. They're like, what does it mean? I don't care if the coast is clear. She kind of had like a situation that she was getting out of. And she was also dating me at the time. And I played it for her. And I mean, I guess people must like it better than she does because she is not here anymore. She's not part of my life. But she always used to ask me, what the hell rhymes with Rachel? And I was like, there's tons of things that rhyme with Rachel. So that's kind of the way I always intro when I'm playing. But that was a really personal song. I was in a really dark space when that happened. I was going out on Broadway. I was out of a relationship. I was drinking every night, you know, kind of thinking I am never going to find love ever.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been out of a 4-year relationship at that point, and I was just getting silly in Music City, like doing the Broadway thing way too often.
And that happens. Yeah, it happens a lot.
It happens. Yeah. And I fell into this spiral and I'm like, I'm never going to find love. And then Rachel came along and all of a sudden I felt that feeling for her. Now, she never felt it for me. But there's a cool lesson in that for me. It's like you can love someone who doesn't love you. It doesn't mean the love isn't real. It just means it's not reciprocal.
Okay.
But I definitely fell for her and it didn't work out. But I got the song. And it's cool because, you know, it was a pretty bad relationship when I look back on it. It really wasn't a great spot in my life. But you can have something bad like that and you can leave with a beautiful song and it's all worth it.
Yeah, so, it is a great song and it's been out now for a little while.
3 days, man. Or 4 days. Holy an eternity. It's crazy. But you know, next week there's gonna be, I don't know, like 50,000 new songs that come out. So it's just crazy how much music comes out now and how hard it is to keep people's ears on something, you know. So
well, now that you're going out on the road, you got a badass song along with a lot of your other originals, and
we got a lot more music too. I mean, there's an EP that I'm producing the whole thing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, Hey Rachel's the first song I actually produced by myself.
That'd be such a cool feeling as the writer, your singing
writer, artist, and producer. It's like the first time wearing all those hats, and I didn't believe I could do it. Now that I know that I can, my whole team is like, well, because you can, and because it's a whole lot cheaper. They're like, you are producing everything. So I have this EP that is just, if I could get to it, it would be out right now. But I think it's going to take like a couple months of work.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, man, it'd be great to have you back on once that's out to go song by song.
Let's do it, man.
We love going in depth with songs and all that stuff, dude. And well, thank you so much for popping by. We'll let you grab that guitar out.
Cool.
Some housekeeping, episode 16, right, Tyler?
Yep.
Episode 16, man. It's crazy. Still going. You guys, make sure you follow us In The Round Podcast on Instagram, In The Round on Facebook. You can also see the cool videos on YouTube. The Coda Bear, the mustache man himself. He's still got that bet going with Tyler, our internet guy, Jacob, and our good buddy, Dave Hangley, with their mustaches. We'll definitely post some pictures, some updates on the story with the mustaches and whatnot. I know we've had people bugging us about that. Now, without further ado, I'm going to let Mr. Jesse LaBelle take it away with Hey Rachel. You all have been listening to the In The Round Podcast.
Hey Rachel, I hope you don't mind me getting carried away, but I want to see you tomorrow and maybe again on the next day. I haven't smiled like this in a while. I haven't felt this kind of life, so I'm putting all my cards on the table. Hey Rachel, this is how a heart's supposed to feel, and I don't want to be careful. I don't care if the coast is clear. I haven't fallen in some time, but you are showing me tonight that I'm still able. Hey Rachel, I've been lost so long in this neon town. I drank so much that I almost drowned. Scared I'd settle just to settle down. And I never thought that I would say I ever needed to be saved. But I swear to God, you must be an angel. Hey Rachel, on the tape deck a wise man said only fools rush in, but I know this feeling is one you can't help falling in. Now all my walls are breaking down, you got them crumbling to the ground, but it looks so graceful. Hey Rachel, I've been lost so long in this neon town. I drank so much that I almost drowned. Scared I'd settle just to settle down. And I never thought that I would say I ever needed to be saved. But I swear to God, you must be an angel. Hey Rachel, for the first time in a long time, I'm everything I want myself to be. And even if it's just for a moment, I'm glad I get to hold it. And for you, I know that I'll always be thankful. Hey, Rachel, I got lost so long in this neon town. I drank so much that I almost drowned. Scared I'd settle just to settle down. And I never thought that I would say I ever needed to be saved. But I swear to God, you must be an angel. Don't mind me getting carried away.